have you here today, Professor Perumian. I was really excited to have someone on the show that doesn't practice neurology or psychiatry, but rather physics and astronomy. Wow, this is really incredible. I know my listeners are really going to enjoy.
It's a pleasure being here.
There has always been a lot of talk over the years about the existence of extraterrestrial life. Okay, so let's just start with the basics. Do you really think humanity is alone in the universe?
Okay, I'm going to give a very long answer to this one. And I'm going to...
Crash course. Let me take my notes.
and the way I'm going to approach it is, you know, because you can approach this question philosophically, you can approach it with religion, and you can approach it scientifically. And if you go back in history, you find that all three of these are intertwined. So if we teleport ourselves back to the time of the Greek civilization, we see great debates whether, you know, Earth is special or the center of the universe or there's nothing else like it, or is it one of many worlds? And in the end, unfortunately, the view that wins out because of Aristotle and his fame is one that Earth is the center of the universe. It's very different from the heavens, and the heavens begin somewhere between the Earth and the moon. So the moon is in the heavens, but it's blemished by its proximity to an imperfect Earth. And so everything beyond that is completely perfect. And so that view persists and actually becomes... So back in the time of Aristotle, science and philosophy were not different. They were basically the same thing. Scientists were philosophers and vice versa. And what passed for science was essentially philosophy. So now you fast forward a couple of centuries and Aristotle's teachings become part of the Catholic Church doctrine. So that now it's heresy to claim that the Earth actually moves around. The sun is not the center of the universe. And in fact, a poor fellow by the name of Giordano Bruno gets burnt at the stake in 1600 because he claims that the other stars that we see are suns out there with planets like the Earth. So that's the backdrop. And now, you know, we switch from that into science. And what we've discovered in the last century, and it's really been in the last century, is something that the famous astronomer Carl Sagan loved to say. He called it the principle of mediocrity. And the word mediocre here doesn't mean our everyday use of something subpar. It means average. It means there's nothing special about the Earth or its place in the universe except that it's our home. Nothing else. It's just another planet orbiting another star in a galaxy out of billions, if not trillions, of galaxies out there. So there's nothing that makes us the center of the universe in any way. The other thing we've learned, as I said, is if you were to think about how many stars there are out there, the number of stars in the universe, like our sun, exceeds the number of grains of sand in all the beaches on Earth. So imagine all of that sand, each grain, and there's more stars in the universe than grains of sand in all of the beaches of Earth. So that's a lot of places. Now, up until about 28 years ago, we had to speculate, well, are we special? Is our solar system special? Is our sun the only star out there that has planets around it? And the answer is an emphatic no. We launched space telescopes. We were able to detect planets around other stars. And so we now think there are more planets than stars in our galaxy. So that increases the number of possible places. And the way I'm approaching this is not just to say, you know, oh, the universe is so vast, there must be something out there. Otherwise, it's a waste of space. So I'm going to approach it two different ways, though. I'm going to say, okay, it is a vast universe. And what we're going to see is in that vast universe, there are lots of planets that are what we call habitable. In other words, they're the right distance from their star to have liquid water on their surface. They're Earth-like in the sense that they're made out of the same elements. You know, there may or may not be water on the surface, but they're about the same size, at least, as the Earth. They're in the same location in their star system or similar locations. So in that sense, the number of locations where life could possibly exist, where the conditions conducive to life could exist, are many. Now let's approach it another way. Let's approach it biologically. What our biologists have found is that life arose on Earth very, very quickly. Now, quickly in the sense of the Earth's age of 4.5 billion years means a couple of 100 million years, but it's still very quick. So by the time the Earth formed and cooled down so that it had liquid water on its surface, within 100 or 200 million years, depends on how controversial you want to get, there was life on its surface. Now, we haven't found life anywhere else, obviously. That would be the biggest discovery of the humanity up to now, I'd say. But given that the necessary ingredients for life, carbon, oxygen, nitrogen, hydrogen, these are the most common elements in the universe. They exist everywhere in abundance. Everything we've seen in our solar system, every object we've looked at in our solar system contains organic molecules. You put all of these together and you say, all right, the conditions, habitable worlds exist throughout the universe. The conditions, the necessary ingredients for life exist. And on Earth, those two combinations gave rise to life very, very quickly. So odds are that's going to happen elsewhere. So my long answer to your question is that it is very probable. Of course, we can't know until we discover that life, but the probability seems to be very, very high that there is life out there.
Wow. So there possibly could be intelligent life out there.
That's another step after that, you know, because
I went too far.
I find this
very, very interesting, and how you explain it is so easy to understand.
Well, let's take that step from life to intelligent life, because life could be microbes.
Sure.
And in fact, if you look at the history of life on Earth, you see that, well, humanity has had a written history for what, 5,000 years, maybe something around that. And Earth has been around for 4.5 billion years. So let's say life has been around for close to 4 billion of those 4.5 billion years. Mm-hmm. For the first 3 billion years, life on Earth was microscopic. Right. You would have to literally take water out of the ocean, look at it under a microscope to say, oh, there's life on this planet. Larger life forms, you know, last 500 million years. And of course, humanity, you know, being able to communicate, or we think we can, with our radio telescopes, with space, the last 100 years or so. So that puts it in perspective that the step from life to intelligent life being defined as a civilization that can communicate with other star systems is about 4 billion years. So and a lot can happen to a planet in that meantime, right?
Right.
but again, given the age of the universe, odds are that it's probable that many planets have taken that step as well.
Okay. All right. So let's kind of switch gears a little bit. So between politics and the pandemic, science doesn't get a lot of news these days.
Right.
But there was news recently about a signal from space, possibly from a planet orbiting another star. Can you talk about this? I mean, like, how is this detected or measured, and what could it mean?
Right. So the signal you're referring to is from the Alpha Centauri system, which happens to be the closest star system to planet Earth, aside from our own. Mm-hmm. And so there's three stars in that star system. And Proxima Centauri, which is actually the closest star to us, technically speaking, we discovered a planet around that star about less than 5 years ago. Okay. And it was a big discovery because one of the things that had kind of had us take a step back was the realization that our sun is not an average star. We used to say this all the time. It was in textbooks. The sun is an average star. Half the stars in the universe are brighter, half are dimmer. And then we built telescopes that we launched into space. We were able to get rid of the atmospheric interference with infrared light. And we realized, no, there are a lot of dimmer stars out there that we couldn't see from the surface of the Earth because the Earth's atmosphere blocks out infrared light. And so the sun got bumped up into the 85th percentile. 85% of stars are dimmer than the sun. And in fact, 76% are so dim that it would take 100 of them put together to make the same amount of starlight that our sun does. So the common wisdom had become that it would be impossible to find a planet around such a star where life could exist because you would have to be extremely close to the star to be warm enough. But then we started finding planets around a lot of these, what we call red dwarf stars. And Proxima Centauri was one of them. We found a planet around this star. And so, of course, because it's only 4 light years away, okay, there was a lot of interest all of a sudden in discovering whether there's anything special about this star system. When we talk about intelligent life, by the way, one of the problems we have is that the communication as we know it proceeds at the speed of light. Radio waves are light. They travel at the speed of light. So a one-way message to Proxima Centauri, which is 4 light years away, would take 4 years one way. So if we say, hi, we're here, they receive it 4 years later and decide to immediately respond. We receive a response 8 years after we sent it. And this is for the nearest star. How many stars are there that near? None. Within 10 light years of Earth, there's about a dozen stars. So this starts becoming a problem of communication. Now, the radio wave that you're referring to, we've been detecting what are called anomalous radio waves throughout the galaxy now, and some from outside of our own galaxy. And the problem with the reason these stand out is the following, that if you look at our galaxy, it produces radio waves across the spectrum. But most of these are noise or very broad. Nothing like the signal you would get, say, from an FM station or an AM station.
Yeah.
Nature can't make sharp signals. By the mechanism with which these are made, you know, because, for example, it's a cloud of gas that's producing it, it becomes diffuse. The signal becomes diffuse. So, and the other thing nature can't do, with some very, very small exceptions, is produce repeating signals. So something that goes, you know, has a cadence that just, you know, goes once a second. Pulsars, which are neutron stars, do that, but there's a handful of them in each galaxy. So to find a signal which is a relatively sharp signal and has some sort of repetition in it, you know, is of interest. Now, the short answer is we don't know what is causing this signal. We have looked with telescopes at Proxima Centauri, and there doesn't seem to be any other signal that would say that there's a civilization out there. And we have been thinking about this for at least 80 years. What can we detect? What can we listen for? And so it doesn't seem to fit into any of those neat categories. So I think the jury is still out on what in that star system is actually causing this.
Wow.
And we'll have to look at it.
Incredible. So, you know, I was talking with friends about you coming on the show and just asking them, when we think intelligent life, everyone thinks, okay, aliens, right?
Right.
What are your thoughts on claims of alien visitations to Earth? Like I have one of my officers in the company claims that he was taken by aliens and was brought back to us. Now, we don't need to go further about how crazy he is, but it was just kind of wild for him to share that with us.
Right.
He was serious.
Well, I find it somewhat not surprising that about somewhere between 30 and 50% of Americans think that aliens have visited the Earth and the government is hiding contact.
Yeah.
Before talking about that, let's talk about intelligent life and their possible visitation to Earth.
Okay.
So, you know, one of the most famous paradoxes out there is what we call the Fermi paradox, which, you know, Enrico Fermi was a famous particle physicist, won the Nobel Prize. Mm-hmm. And he was contemporaries with Carl Sagan and a bunch of others who kept talking about the possibility of intelligent life out there. And he asked a very simple question. He said, okay, you've laid the groundwork. There's all these planets, there's all these stars, there's all these galaxies, and we're listening, presumably at the right frequencies. So where are the aliens? That was the question. Where are they? And so we've tried to come up with answers of why we haven't detected any signs of intelligent civilizations out there. Short answer is we've only been listening for 80 years. But the other thing to consider is this. When the universe was first formed by the Big Bang, the universe was made out of hydrogen and helium only. Mm-hmm. Every other element we see around us was formed inside stars. That's why Carl Sagan famously said that we are star stuff. Every atom in our bodies, every atom that the Earth is made out of, was once inside a star. Several generations of stars had to live and blow up in supernova explosions to enrich that galactic gas that eventually gave rise to the sun and the Earth. Now, that kind of a condition for an Earth-like planet to form didn't exist early in the life of the universe, but it existed about 4 billion years later. So we're talking about 8, 9 billion years ago. Now, the Earth is only 4.5 billion years old. And so it's presumably possible that there are Earth-like planets out there that formed 4 billion years before the Earth did. And so you start thinking, okay, 4 billion years of a head start. Life starts within a couple of hundred million years. That civilization is as far ahead of us as we're ahead of the first microbes on Earth.
Right, right.
Okay?
Yeah.
All right, so that this hasn't happened and we're the first, even though that's one of the possible solutions to the Fermi paradox, that we're the first, is again very Earth-centric. Mm. It says, you know, we're special in some way, and we're not. So,
well, we're not.
So the odds that there are very, very intelligent star-faring civilizations out there is not small. Now, whether those civilizations would get into starships, buzz around to the Earth, and not just, you know, have to listen to our voices and our radios and TV and tap into the internet, but they'd feel obligated to land on the planet and interact with humans by abducting them, that is a very, very big stretch of the imagination. And one thing that you have to consider is this. About 7 years ago, a meteor entered the atmosphere above Chelyabinsk, Russia, in Siberia. Mm-hmm. And this was the most photographed astronomical event ever, in the sense that most cars in Russia have dash cams in their cars to make sure that nobody gets into a fake accident with you and tries to claim, you know, insurance fraud. The meteor was photographed, videoed from 400 different perspectives. And so we were able to construct the exact path of the meteor, you know, when it broke up, the sonic boom and everything else about it. Now, think about how many billions of people have cameras in their pockets now.
Yeah, right.
Very good cameras. And we don't have a single good picture of an alien starship or aliens visiting us. And that already starts, you know, informing your judgment. The other thing to consider is that every time someone claims that they're visited or abducted by aliens, they describe aliens as humanoid.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a bigger head, greener skin, yeah, but two eyes, a nose, a mouth, two arms, two legs. And to think about the 3.5 billion years of evolution and the accidents, the meteorite impacts and everything else, the mass extinctions that eventually led to two-arm and two-legged humans on Earth, happening somewhere else identically, that's impossible. It's not impossible. It's improbable. Let's put it that way. So if we do get visited by aliens, they're not going to look like anything we ever imagined.
Yeah, yeah. About what happened in Roswell, New Mexico in 1947, right?
Right.
Okay, Area 51. I know that was before our time, But a lot of people I know still talk about it like the government is covering up alien bodies and technologies. What are your thoughts on that?
Okay, obviously I wasn't around back then. And what's interesting is that the Roswell story is really picked up about 30 years after the incident. So when the incident happened, the Army put out a statement because, the Army contained the Air Force back then. They put out a statement that this is a weather balloon that's crashed.
Right.
And later on, declassified information showed us that what they were saying was a weather balloon was really a balloon that they designed to send into the stratosphere to be able to sniff out whether the Russians are carrying out nuclear bomb tests or not. And one of these had crashed, and they didn't want to tell the Russians that they had this capability of realizing when Russia does nuclear tests and how strong they are. So that is the official story. Years later, decades later, people looked at this event and saw some of the pictures, none of which contained alien bodies, and said, oh, this must have been an alien crash landing, and the bodies are kept in Area 51. So where that story came from is pretty vague. It also has to do with the interest that erupted in alien civilizations. 1960s, this is when the Drake equation was born. This is when we were listening. This is when radio astronomy became a thing and we started listening to the stars. If you look at the heyday of the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, it was the 1960s. And at the end of this time is when you start hearing the stories of aliens, of seeing unidentified lights in the sky and thinking these must be things from another planet rather than our own creations.
Ah, okay. All right. So lastly, how is the vastness of the universe or the existence or lack thereof of life or intelligent life out there relevant to us here and now?
I think it's very relevant. If you think about, everything we talked about today, what we've done in about 2,500 years is slowly break apart the shell we'd created around ourselves. I call it the shell of geocentrism. Geocentrism meaning Earth-centric. Again, thinking we are special. Earth is the center of the universe. No, it's not. Earth is, special in some other way because none of the conditions on Earth exist elsewhere. Or as Aristotle had claimed, even the laws of nature are different from on Earth than in the heavens. We've disproved all of these. I think the last step in that is realizing that we are not the only place where life exists, but perhaps we're part of a larger system or a larger community, if you want to call them, that we have not joined yet. So I think that would be the last part of the brick in the wall that we'd have to remove to say, listen, this is a universe that we're part of. Now, whether or not that answer is we are alone or we're not alone is equally informative. Because if we are, in fact, alone, if you're arguing that, no, this can't happen somewhere else, well, then that makes us think twice as hard about our responsibility as far as the Earth is concerned. If this is the only place that life arose in the entire universe, then we better take care of it. Much, much better than we have.
And how we are right now, yes.
In another way, think about, for example, you're having, and we haven't had this experience in months, but think about bringing guests to your home, right? You want to show off your house. You want to clean it first. You want to make sure that the best view of your house is seen by your guests. We don't want another civilization visiting us and looking at us and saying, you're destroying your planet. And
well,
so I think
they're saying that.
Well, they are saying that. Yeah. I mean, look, one of the possible solutions to Fermi's paradox is that the whatever civilization or community of civilizations there is out there is waiting for us to cross some threshold that we haven't in intelligence, in social behavior, technology, you name it. But they could be looking at us and saying, they're warlike. people are dying of famine on that planet. They're not advanced. We're not going to include them because they might infect us in more ways than one. So I think the question of life in the universe, whether it's intelligent life or just microbial life, is one of introspection. It's one of us looking at ourselves and saying, are we ready to join a galactic civilization? And what do we have to offer for that? Or what do we have to accomplish to look proudly at other civilizations that we meet and say, these are the thresholds we crossed. Yes, we had wars. Yes, we had famine. But those are in the past. So I think questions like this give us a chance to learn about ourselves and learn to embetter ourselves. And I think that's the most important aspect of searching for life elsewhere.
Absolutely. Taking better care of ourselves. Right. Wow. Well, Professor Perumian, I have to thank you again for spending some time here with us today. And it was extremely stimulating. And I did create new neurons in my brain because I learned something new today. So hopefully my listeners as well will be just as stimulated. But thank you again.
It was my pleasure. It was a pleasure talking to you.
All right. Thank you. We'll see you again soon. And for everybody else out there, you know what I'm going to say. Don't get blinded by those chandeliers.